if you were paying close attention to the events calendar that was mailed out from the church recently, you saw that it noted that today is Transfiguration Sunday. I was totally wrong about that when I created that calendar. According to the liturgical calendar, liturgical meaning church, according to the calendar of the church year that begins the first Sunday of Advent and ends with Christ the King Sunday, which is often the last Sunday in November, today, February 3rd, is the fourth Sunday after Epiphany. And Transfiguration Sunday, March 3rd, is exactly 1 month from today. That's something interesting about February and March. The days of the weeks are numbered the same this month and next. It can get a little confusing for people like me, but for our purposes today, it works. I like being able to say that Transfiguration Sunday is just 1 month from today. It builds up a sense of anticipation for a day that most people don't even know about, much less celebrate. It's sort of like when stores build up anticipation by advertising how many shopping days are left until Christmas, except for that's a great thing about Transfiguration Sunday. No one is expecting any gifts. It hasn't been corrupted by the commercialism of our culture. And just to refresh our memories, before we go any further with this Transfiguration Sunday business, you might be wondering, what's the Transfiguration? And here is the story as it appears in Matthew's Gospel. Jesus took with him Peter, James, and John, the brother of James, and led them up a high mountain by themselves. There Jesus was transfigured before them. His face shone like the sun, and his clothes became as white as light. Just then there appeared before them Moses and Elijah talking with Jesus. Peter said to Jesus, "Lord, it is good for us to be here. If you wish, I will put up three shelters, one for you, one for Elijah, and one for Moses." While Peter was still speaking, a bright cloud covered them, and a voice from the cloud said, "This is my son, whom I love. With him I am well pleased. Listen to him." Now, I think Transfiguration Sunday is worth some type of hype. It's a holiday worth waiting a month for, a holiday to anticipate, a special occasion that doesn't get its due, a day on which, I don't know, maybe it wouldn't be a bad idea to buy someone a new pair of shoes. That being said, I confess that for the first 18 Transfiguration Sundays of my career, which would be every single one of them up until now, I have struggled to find the meaning in Transfiguration Sunday. Some years I have skipped it altogether, knowing that few people would miss it. But this year feels different. Perhaps it just took some maturing on my part to understand that, at least within the context of the modern world in which we are living, and the fear-mongering and division some folks are foaming at the mouth to inflict upon us, well, perhaps we're missing out if we miss out on the meaning of Transfiguration. That being said, a struggle I've had with Transfiguration Sunday was that it didn't resonate with my daily life. It's a great story, but who of us is going to hike up a hill with Jesus and see Moses and Elijah, who'd been dead for generations? Who of us have had the experience of seeing dingy, dirty clothing caked with the sweat and dust of Middle Eastern desert walking paths turn a blinding and pure white right before our own eyes? We have to wash our clothes. And we don't see dead people come back to life. And yet, getting caught up in the extraordinary details of the story, which is what I've been doing for the past 18 years, every time it pops up in the lectionary, is getting lost in the weeds. If we look at it from a different vantage point and focus on the word transfiguration instead of the details of the story of the transfiguration, its relevance to our daily lives becomes compelling, something worthy of a month of reflecting upon as we prepare for the actual Transfiguration Sunday a month from today. The root of the word transfiguration is, of course, transfigure. Transfigure means a complete change of form or appearance into a more beautiful or spiritual state. A complete change of form of appearance into a more beautiful or spiritual state. Now, there's an idea that can get some traction. Jesus was God's chosen one. This is my son, sent to change the world, empowered to instigate a transfiguration of the world into a more beautiful and spiritual state. Jesus was a redeemer with the power to take that which is dingy, dirty, caked with sweat and dust. Indeed, a redeemer with the power to take that which was dead and make it into something beautiful and radiant. And so it is that as those who got out of bed on this gray, rainy, slurpy morning because we wish to follow in the ways of Jesus, we too as the church, the hands and feet of Christ in the world today, are called to be agents of transfiguration. That is why this holiday is important for us. Transfiguration matters. Indeed, one of the purposes of the church is to transfigure, is to make more beautiful and spiritual this world in which we live. This has been the reality of the church's calling since the beginning of the church. The Apostle Paul, the most prolific missionary the church has ever known, authored the how-to manuals on creating, building up, and maintaining the Church of Jesus in the world. He founded churches, and then after he had moved on to start another, he wrote letters back to the churches he had started to support them, guide them, correct them, and inspire them. Paul's letters are the portion of the Bible that we call the epistles, the letters. They're located in the New Testament after the Gospels. Now, one of these letters was written to the church in Galatia. Scott read a portion of it for us this morning. Paul wrote the letter to guide the Galatians through a crisis they were facing from those who were trying to create false divisions in their church. Divisions that would distract them and keep them from the work of transfiguration to which God called them. The divisions came from those who said that new Christians, before you could join the Christian church, first you had to become a Jew. So you would have to follow Jewish purity laws and food laws and become circumcised. So it created a huge stumbling block for a lot of people for their joining the church. And that really made Paul angry because it created a sense of insiders and outsiders in the church in Galatia. And it encouraged those who were already in the church to see those outside of the church as other, which often kept them from joining the church. Paul was furious about this, because for Paul, preserving the unity of the church was of utmost importance if the church was to survive and be about its work of transfiguring the world. He explained that the things that used to divide the people, the things that were important outside the walls of the church, were simply not relevant for those who followed Christ, because Christ had transfigured the world into a more beautiful place where all people could live in solidarity, where all people could be as one. And Paul wrote to the Galatians saying, "So in Christ Jesus, you are all children of God through faith. For all of you were baptized into Christ and have clothed yourself with Christ. There is neither Jew nor Gentile, neither slave nor free, nor is there male and female, for you are all one in Jesus Christ," Paul tells them. Unfortunately, the church in particular and society in general continues to struggle with divisions among the children of God.
Divisions often created by those who delight in the power they gain when people are distracted by insignificant differences and false binaries. It remains an issue of such importance today that there was even an article about this in a recent Time magazine. And the author of the article writes, "Jesus is remembered once to have said, 'Who made me a divider? I'm not a divider.' That line, found in the Gospel of Thomas, may strike an ironic note today. Nothing, it seems, divides us more than Jesus. Believer from non-believer, evangelical from liberal, Christian from Jew or Muslim, religion divides us along ethnic lines and by class, and it imposes distinctions in male-female gender roles not tolerated anywhere else in society. So it may seem a stretch to think that the very first Christian creed aimed not to divide, but to create ties of solidarity precisely across ethnic, class, and gender lines. In fact, the early Christians made solidarity the very focus of the new communities they created. The first Christian creed said nothing about the nature of God or Jesus Christ or salvation. It spoke of the children of God and urged a spirit of oneness that could unite Jew and Greek, slave and free, male and female. Many today will find that idea incredible, but scholars of the New Testament have known of this early creed embedded in one of Paul's letters for more than a century. You can find it today, still there in Galatians 3, 26 through 28. Unearthing it from this context and restoring its original lines requires some exegetical spade work, and scholars will quibble on its precise wording, but none doubt of its existence. When the first followers of Jesus were baptized, this is what they heard. You are all children of God. You are all children of God. There is no Jew or Greek. There is no slave or free. There is no male and female, for you are all one. Race, class, and gender have been used by every people in every time and place to draw a line between us and them to the advantage of us, of course. But these early Jesus followers decided to assume a different posture. For our purposes this morning, we could say that they felt compelled to transfigure their society. For them, there would be no us, no them. No ethnicity, class, or gender. These would count for nothing. They simply would not exist. For you are all one, they said. Not you are all the same. Sameness wasn't the point. The point was oneness, solidarity that transcended race, class, or gender. Talk about a belief that would transfigure. A belief that would make the world more beautiful and spiritual. The belief that we are all one, wanted and welcomed by God and the church. It's a revolutionary idea, this oneness, this solidarity, not just for the people of ancient Galatia, but for us and this world in which we are living, a world that is desperate for transfiguration, a world that desperately needs to be made more beautiful and spiritual, a world that thirsts for unity and solidarity and an end to division and strife. I usually don't like making mistakes, but I am so glad I messed up this calendar thing. Because it's going to give us a whole month to reflect upon, pray about, and identify ways we as a church and as individuals have experienced transfiguration and how we can be agents of transfiguration in the world. Next week, we're going to consider the transfiguring power of listening. But for this week, you are invited to keep an eye out for people who are transfiguring the world. people who are making your life and the lives of others more beautiful and spiritual. People who are intent on building bridges and creating a sense of solidarity instead of fixating on false divisions and making us believe that there is somehow in this world of all of us being created by God, us and them. For there really is only us. Us, the children of God. When you see examples of those things, those people, if you want to jot them down and send them along to me, I'd be glad to hear about it, and I'll incorporate them into next week's service. I think we'd all appreciate hearing the good news you have to share about witnessing God's transfiguring work in the world this week. Thanks be to God for the promise and hope of things becoming more beautiful, the promise and the hope of things becoming more spiritual. Thanks be to God for the gift of transfiguration and our opportunity to be part of it. Thanks be to God indeed. Let us pray.